Welcome to The Patient's Perspective, presented by the Embrace Your Heart Wellness Initiative. I'm your host, Eliz Green. In this episode, we are discussing the challenges faced by women living on blood thinners. A key part of the title is the word living. As women living with heart disease, we are so grateful to our doctors and other healthcare professionals. We often don't wish to complain about the side effects, challenges, and other issues we face as a result of the medications, surgeries, or treatments we receive. That is why the patient's perspective discussions are so important. We can openly discuss these issues and allow healthcare providers to listen in and hear what's really going on. For this episode, I'm joined by three guests: Hay Marie Cordes from Wisconsin, Patty Borkowski, also from Wisconsin, and Melanie Truehills from Texas. Let's join the discussion as we explore the patient's perspective on women living on blood thinners.
You know, it's interesting how quickly we become experts in our own health when we're forced to do so. So let's jump right in. It's summertime, and I know Kay Marie and I were just talking the other day about how being on blood thinners often dictates what we wear.
Oh, yes.
Would you like to talk a little bit about that, Kay Marie?
Absolutely. Obviously, one of the side effects of blood thinners can be lots of bruising, and I noticed that, in the summertime it's hard. When it starts to get warmer out, you think twice about what you want to wear as far as shorts or skirts or sleeveless tops and wardrobe. You obviously don't want to walk around feeling like someone's been beating you up or give off that impression by any means, but it's a challenge. It's a challenge on a daily basis, and you can simply run into something very lightly and not feel like that was any big deal, and the next day you can wake up with a huge bruise on your leg or your arm. It's quite a treat sometimes.
Well, I know if I've gone in to visit the, have that wonderful annual exam and had to tell the nurse that, no, I'm not an abused wife, really, truly. Check my chart. The reason for all the bruising is the blood thinner. Melanie, I know you shared a while ago that you had some trouble when you were on the blood thinner with dark circles. Is that right?
Yeah, I had a lot of trouble. I was never really able to be totally stable on Coumadin, and Eliz, you were talking about the bruising and stuff when you go in for your checkup. Well, I had a situation where I was constantly bruised. It was all over my arms, all over my legs, my torso, my face, even, dark purple circles around my eyes and splotching on my, skin of my face. So I really looked bad. And it was to the point that my husband didn't want to ever take me any place because he felt like he was compelled to say, I don't beat her. It's the Coumadin. And, it's really bad when your family feels like they have to apologize for the way you look. And, for me, I was constantly, the Dermablend and the Coverblend and all that kind of stuff just to try to cover up the stuff on my face, before actually putting on, the rest of my makeup. Particularly, bad when you're going out on stage to speak.
Right.
And you've got all the bruises on your face.
Right. And the Dermablend was something that you shared with me. Can you share a little bit more about that?
Yeah. Actually, Dermablend is something that I discovered many, many years ago because I had, just this little mark side of my face that was, something that had just come up that was a sunspot, and, I wanted to cover it up. And I discovered Dermablend at the cosmetic counter. It was created by a woman who had a birthmark that she wanted to cover up, and, nothing in the way of makeup would cover it up. And so she created Dermablend to do that. So I discovered it, and it's wonderful stuff. You basically put just a little on your hand and then, on your fingertips, and just kind of let it melt on your fingertips by rubbing it together, and then you just touch it on the places that are dark, and let that sit for a moment, and then you put the powder that sets it on top of it, and then you can put your makeup on top of it, or you can actually do that over your makeup.
That's been around for a long time, Dermablend.
Absolutely. It's wonderful for those of us who are dealing with Coumadin and
I'm
you know,
getting
those kinds of issues.
For those, you know.
And I just want to remind everybody that we do have a completely open line, so anything that you say we do here. You know, the dermal blend works not only on your face, and I have used it when I'm speaking and I'm wearing something, you know, sleeveless or whatever, and I often have bruises on my arms, so it works there too.
Mm-hmm. That was going to be my question. Could you use it on other parts of your body without it rubbing off or getting onto something else, another piece of clothing or something?
Absolutely.
Really well.
That's what the setting powder does, is to keep it from really rubbing, and so it, you know, you don't have a problem with sweating and it, you know, dripping off or anything like that. Works well.
I may have to try that. I've kind of found myself using, Sally Hansen actually has like a spray-on type of a, I don't want to call it a tanner because it's really not a tanner, but it's a spray-on type of a skin color lotion thing that just gives you a little bit more. It's what it's supposed to do. It's supposed to even out your skin tone on your legs so you don't have to wear nylons and things like that. But I found that it actually can work sometimes too with light. Wow, I think that sounds maybe a little bit more professional.
Yeah, it does. It works brilliantly under pantyhose. It's great. Does anybody have any other comments or questions about the bruising issue?
Well, you know, I do have one. This is Melanie, and you know, as I said, I had a terrible time. Never really was stable on Coumadin. And one of the things that I discovered is you don't have to bump into something in order to bruise if your Coumadin is totally out of control and your blood's too thin. It can just actually leak out of your blood vessels. So even just being careful not to bump into something still doesn't necessarily protect you. So that's, you know, if you start seeing, you know, bruises come up on your skin and you know you didn't bump into something in that area, that's probably a clue that your blood is way too thin and you need to make sure that you're getting it back under control quickly. So that was,
that's
for me, a clue to call the Coumadin Clinic and get back in and get my blood tested to see where I was when I started having, you know, stuff that was really totally unexpected.
Well, maybe we should move into talking a little bit about that plant. I mean, I once had somebody tell me that I shouldn't shave my legs because that was too risky when I was on Coumadin.
Absolutely.
Like that wouldn't happen, though. I was not going to not shave my legs. But you do have to be more careful. I found, for me, one of the things that helped with it, sort of just the anxiety of, is sort of have a plan about, all right, if something happens, what am I going to do? And do you ladies carry a card in your wallet or wear medical alert bracelet?
Absolutely. Even though I'm not on Coumadin now, I do still carry my medical information card in my purse with me at all times. I have a copy of it in my luggage when I'm traveling. I have a copy in my briefcase. My husband keeps a copy. You know, we have that. And, you know, I think one of the most important, and I wore my medic alert as well, but I think one of the most important things we can do is not only for us to have a plan, but to communicate it to our family members so they understand what to do if our Coumadin is out of control or if we injure ourselves, so that other people are aware of it too.
Well, and I agree with you, Melanie. This is Kay Marie again. I do the same exact thing. I have emergency cards everywhere, in the car, in my purse, in my gym bag, hanging on my refrigerator. And I've even told my neighbor, hey, look, it's on my fridge. If anyone needs to come to the house, you know where it is if I can't, you know, be of any help at the time. My families have it. My job where I work, they have one in their emergency file. And I also wear my emergency, you know, ID bracelet as well. I'm on Plavix, though, but I still sent a lot when she was on the Coumadin as well. you know, with the bruising and all that kind of stuff. But I also carry around a lot of Band-Aids. I learned to do that, too. Lots of Band-Aids. I'm never without Band-Aids. And people will always, if they need one, they know to come to me because I have them. All different sizes, too, because you never know what you're going to need or how many you're going to soak through before it finally stops bleeding.
Well,
that's the other terror of it all.
You know, that's the thing. I was always so scared about the big gusher.
Mm-hmm.
But the thing that I had found was really more of an issue was that it just won't stop. It's not
mm-hmm.
a huge
yes.
amount of blood, but it just doesn't stop. And I sat in a very sort of embarrassing situation where I had been off the Coumadin for, you know, the requisite 3 or 4 days before I had an abnormal pap smear after my girls were born, and so I needed to have a biopsy. So went off the Coumadin, went and had the biopsy. You know, it was just a little, you know, pinch that they take,
mm-hmm.
and it all turned out fine, thank goodness, but it wouldn't stop oozing.
Mm-hmm.
So my OBGYN sat there with his finger on my cervix for 45 minutes waiting for the thing to stop bleeding, which is just, I mean,
mm-hmm.
you can't make conversation for that long in that
position. When you're in that position, too.
So it's just like, okay, I've completely run out of things to talk about now. It doesn't stop. And this past winter,
mm-hmm.
I whacked my head on the corner of the cupboard and took a chunk out of my forehead 3 days before I had to be on TV. And because I had a plan, I immediately laid down, got ice on it. Clay came in, my husband, and, you know, after a couple of minutes, I said, okay, take a look, and lifted it off. And he goes, yep, we need to go. And we went in, and they were able to get it to stop. But it, you know, I was in there for quite a while and never did
mm-hmm.
stop until
mm-hmm.
they put the gauze on it to, they had like this gluey gauze stuff that bonded
mm-hmm.
with the blood somehow and made it stop.
Right.
Now that's what I'd like to carry around or something like that.
I have that.
I didn't know that thing existed.
Yeah.
Well, you know, there is some stuff that you can put on, you know, scraped knees and that sort of thing for kids that is kind of like a resin.
Mm-hmm.
And I've seen it at, like, you know, Walmart and then, you know, other places that have, you know, pharmacies. So I wonder if that stuff would work for, you know, someone that's on Coumadin.
Is that like a liquid glue?
I'm sorry, what?
Like a liquid Band-Aid? Liquid,
yeah, it's kind of like a little roll-on tube.
Yeah. I've tried that before, and I've had luck with smaller cuts, but if
mm-hmm.
it's a little bit bigger,
uh-huh.
it doesn't work as well.
Okay.
And I think maybe it's just because the blood's flowing too fast. I don't
could
know
be.
What it is. But,
yeah, could be.
Mm-hmm.
Well, now there is a good transition statement, the blood flowing too fast. Should we move on to talk about the icky periods?
One of our favorite topics.
Kay Marie and I have spent many, many times talking about the icky period problem.
Yes, hashing that out more than one occasion.
I know we each have had the experience, the embarrassing experience of being somewhere just a little too long.
Mm-hmm.
You want to share yours, or you want me to share mine?
Oh, I'll start. Yeah, I would love to share the story. You know, in the beginning, it seemed like my periods were just, I was always normal Nancy with my periods, always, always, always. And then the blood thinner situation started when I started on that, and I didn't know what hit me. But I'm a kindergarten teacher, and we were having conferences one fall, and you know, I happened to get my period like the day or two before, and I'm like, God, geez. You know, because you just never know what's going to happen. So I planned ahead, as we were talking about earlier, and I made sure I brought all my backup with me, and I wore black bands and for like 25 to maybe 40 minutes, I stood up to walk out with the parents, and I almost felt as if a floodgate had opened up, and
uh-oh.
I felt soaked. And I stood there, and thank God I had on black pants.
Mm-hmm.
And the parents looked at me as if they thought something was wrong, and they asked me, and I said, no, I'm okay. And I said, everything's fine. You know, we'll talk later. And they left. Thank goodness I didn't have a follow-up conference, but it was one of those where I went into the bathroom, and I thought, this isn't going to last. I can't do this all night long. And went through and finished up my last three conferences, and then I went down and I discreetly talked to my male principal and explained kind of what was going on in not so many terms, and he said, go home. Don't even stay around anymore. Go home. And I did, but it was just a horrible situation. Didn't know it was going to be as bad until I stood up, and I'm like, oh, my goodness. So not a fan of the icky periods. Never,
no.
Never, never.
No.
In fact, when I had talked to my first cardiologist about the whole situation with them, he had said, I never heard this before. And I said, well, I'm 34. I'm not your typical heart patient you get in here. So you're probably not going to have heard this before, but it's something that you need to be aware of. When you got younger women on, you know, blood thinners, this is what is a potential, you know, side effect. So
right. And you're on Plavix. Right.
And that is such an important topic for doctors to be aware of because,
mm-hmm.
as you said, you know, doctors are mostly used to having older patients on Coumadin,
mm-hmm. mm-hmm.
and this is a whole new dimension that they would not even think of.
Sure. Well, I feel like I've really educated my doctors a lot over the last couple of years because I've been very vocal with how medication has been affecting me and my daily lifestyle. And, I mean, I know it's for future conversations on this particular phone line of other medications we'll talk about, but it really is something that I feel very, you know, adamant about letting the doctors know, hey, this is an issue for somebody my age. What can we do about it to kind of relieve some of these problems? And on top of it, I'm also on baby aspirin, so I kind of have the double whammy going.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
But, mm-hmm.
And anyway. I have yet to find a product that will handle that particular situation. I mean,
mm-hmm.
I can be okay most of the time, but when you're sitting in one position for, nothing that I've found
mm-hmm.
that stands up to it. And if somebody else has, boy, I'd like to hear it.
And, other than the rubber pants I think we joked about. I mean, do we have to go to those drastic measures?
I know,
question.
I know. Well, I slept with a bedwetting pad when
mm-hmm.
I was on Coumadin because I ruined way too many sheets.
Sheets, oh, sure. And pajamas and the whole nine
right.
yards.
And,
mm-hmm.
and a mattress. but the Plavix is better. It's still a problem. But when I was on Coumadin, it was crazy. I am not sure I could have worked outside the home when
mm-hmm.
I was on Coumadin because
mm-hmm.
I just, there was no way to predict how bad it was going to be. And how long it would be in between times I would have to go and change.
Mm-hmm.
So
mm-hmm.
it really is. And my INR, the thinness of my blood, really fluctuated during that period of time as well. So it was hard to control. Glad
sure.
to be on Plavix now.
Did you say you were?
I'm on Plavix now.
You are on Plavix now. Okay,
and,
that's what I thought.
And it's better. Still
mm-hmm.
still
mm-hmm.
a problem, but better than it was on. Does anybody else have any questions or something to share on the icky period problem?
In my case, I actually was a little bit older when I started on the Coumadin, so that was not an issue for me. But I do think that this is an area that doctors just need to know more about.
Mm-hmm.
It's something that, you know, probably hasn't crossed most of their minds. And I think
right.
it's great that you're raising this issue, Elias.
It's one of those things that I really like talking with physicians and other healthcare providers, whether it's nurses or cardiac rehab
mm-hmm.
therapists. It's often something that they as you said, Kay, just go, oh, man, didn't even think about that. Yeah, it makes
mm-hmm.
sense that would be an issue,
mm-hmm.
but never thought about it.
Right, right.
So it is something that we do need to do some work on because
mm-hmm.
it's a huge impact on women's
mm-hmm.
lives.
Well, and I'll never even forget the first time I brought it up to my doctor, and he kind of looked at me, and he's like, well, what's the problem? I'm like, what's the problem? I'm like, blood thinners and having your period, it's you know, kind of a very frustrating, you know, time of the month for me. And he said, well, it can't be that bad. I'm like, it is that bad. You know, I'm telling you it's that bad. You know, I wouldn't be bringing this to your attention if I was just kind of like, okay, I need a few extra pads a day, or I've gone through, you know, maybe two more tampons than usual. But I'm going through like a box almost a day. That's a lot. So, yeah, and you know, he wasn't being negative in any way, or I think it was just more confused. He just didn't understand. And
right.
Then I talked to his nurse, and she seemed to be a little more on my side. She's like, let me explain it to him. I'm like, thank you. You're a woman. You understand. Talk to him about it. So it seemed to help, because then he was a lot more sympathetic to my situation. But, of course, there was nothing they could do. You know, they weren't going to take me off of it. So
right.
I had to figure out ways to live on it. And I have, you know, I do. And that's how it is.
That's why it's called living with blood thinners, or living with anything else.
Mm-hmm.
We're happy
mm-hmm.
to be here.
Living so, exactly is the key word.
So do you change your diet any in order to accommodate some of that change?
Oh, that's interesting.
That's a good question.
I don't. I eat more chocolate, but I don't think that has anything to do with it.
Well, we know what the chocolate helps with. That certainly helps with our moods.
Yes. Makes me care less about the icky period, but
that's how we deal with the icky period.
That's an interesting idea, and I know you have, Melanie, quite a bit to share about diet and the and how that affects the thinness of your blood. And I know when I was on Coumadin, the going in and being tested once a week was a little intrusive on the lifestyle. You know, not only the going in and having it tested, but then waiting the day or a day and a half to get the results, and the sort of going up and down constantly. Oh, well, don't take any today, and we'll test you again. Okay, well, now we'll have to double it, because you're sort of bouncing between high and low and never really getting in the middle. I think Patty has an entirely different experience. And when she was telling me what she does for testing, I was like, why wasn't that around when I was going through this? Would you like to share what you get to do, Patty?
I would love to. And, you know, that really is why I think that I feel like I'm pretty much under control with what I do, because it's the place that I go to that is so supportive and so inclusive and gives me so much information and coaching. I live in Milwaukee, and I go to Frederick Hospital, which is affiliated with our local medical college. And I think that is also in itself rather helpful to be a part of the latest and the greatest. But I was shocked when Eliz told me that some blood is drawn just out of your arm. When I go to Frater, I have my appointment. I go in, and the people that see us in the anticoagulation clinic are full-time pharmacists that take turns working the anticoagulation clinic, which is great, because they at a moment's notice can tell you that if you are taking an additional med or changing a med, how it's going to affect your INR number, which stands, by the way, for International Normalized Ratio. Mm-hmm. I go in, I get a painless minor finger prick blood draw, very minimal amount of blood is drawn. It goes onto a machine, and in 40 seconds, I get my counseled by the pharmacist as to whether we need a change in my prescription. You know, I get asked a standard routine list of questions about stroke symptoms, you know, that type of thing, just to make sure that I'm healthy. And then when I leave, I am given patient instructions that I take with me. It thanks me for being there. It tells me what my INR number is. It tells me what my current dose of warfarin, which is what I take, generic Coumadin, is. It tells me when my next appointment is, and then a number if I need to reschedule. It takes, 5 minutes, and I walk out with just such minimally invasive proceduring done that it's just a joy. I have all of my questions answered. I have an expert in front of me. And I don't also then obviously have to wait for the lab to get back to me, and therefore sometimes wait for precious time to really adjust what my dosage would be. So it's truly just an absolute joy. They have a handbook that they give you when you first go to the clinic, and it really answers very, very basic questions that I think really puts you in as much of the driver's seat as you can be at times.
Well, that sounds heavenly.
Compared
to what most of us go through, or you know, those of us that have been on it in the past have gone through.
You know, it truly is, and you feel like such a valued patient, and you are, and it just, I think it allows me to have all the information I need to do what I can to be sensible and smart. And
also, what happened today?
Oh, yes, indeed. That's a very interesting thing. I was just diagnosed with a case of pneumonia.
And thank you for being with us.
Oh, it's, you know, I said that I'm sitting on this couch like the princess that I am, and life is good. So I had been given an antibiotic to take and a steroid to take. And after I made my visit with my doctor, I had a very thorough list from her as well that I walked out with, so that if I forgot anything she told me, it was on these wonderful little pieces of paper. And under patient instruction, and I'm looking at my piece of paper now, it says, notify Coumadin Clinic of the meds you are now taking. So I went home and I called Coumadin Clinic. I spoke to a pharmacist right away, and he immediately cut my dosage in half because these meds that I'm taking are doing the work for it, and he was very much afraid that my blood thinner was going to go just way too thin. So then I also went into the Coumadin Clinic and had my blood taken just today, and it was still too high. So I was able to get another readjustment. And I'm amazed at how thorough this hospital is and how much it cares about its patients and how this wasn't missed. Because I can assure you, if my doctor hadn't said something, it never would have occurred to me to call the anticoagulation clinic. I never would have thought of it. And it was going to be a while until my next appointment. So it just isn't a pleasant thought as to what would have been happening.
Absolutely. Well, that's great that they think of those kinds of things, and they're so integrated that they can remind you to take care of those details.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Exactly. And they just have so many tips that have just made such a difference in my everyday living that I'm just so, so very grateful for the kind of facility that they are.
That is awesome. Well, Liz, you were talking about, you know, taking day and a half to get yours back. In my case, they made us come in before 11 o'clock so that the results were always back that same day. And then our doctor's nurse would call and adjust the Coumadin or tell us, you know, everything's fine, here's your number, and that sort of thing. So ours was all done in the same day. But even so, you still had to go in. You had to have the big, you know, blood draw out of your arm. And in my case, when they were trying to use the big needle, that just didn't work with me. I always had them do the butterfly because the butterfly was a much thinner needle, and that worked much, much better for me. The big needle for the blood draw never really worked well. And so even so, they did, you know, they still were taking a lot of blood, and, you know, and sometimes it was, you know, quite a few hours before you got the feedback. So that's great, Patty, that you're getting that instant feedback and can make the
adjustment.
Isn't it great?
Right
away.
Yes,
very much so.
And so connected.
Mm-hmm.
I like what you said about making a difference in everyday living.
Mm-hmm.
You know, because once we have our acute problem solved, we still have to live every day. when our doctors and healthcare facilities can help us do that better, that's the real key.
I mean, just to be able to walk out of there with no questions and everything so thorough and it's on the papers there for you, I mean, that's just amazing.
Exactly. And a tiny round bandage on a finger, which I sometimes don't need. So, yeah, it's just... it's amazing. My hat is off to them. But until I talked to Liz, I didn't realize that everybody didn't do it this way. Mm-hmm. I just thought this was standard procedure.
Right. Well, and talk about bruising. I mean, that was just, mm-hmm. I constantly was bruised on the inside of my arm. I was going to get a bruise.
Right. And Liz, you said you were doing yours every week as well.
At the beginning, and of course you have to remember, I had just given birth and I was breastfeeding, so I had all kinds of things that were messing with my body.
Oh yeah,
hormones changing, and you know, schlepping infant twins in and out of the lab, that was fun too. So,
oh yeah.
For, you know, now that I think back on it, for the first, I think, 6 weeks, they came to my house.
Oh, that's
heaven. Yeah, well, I couldn't really move, so
right.
I was tied down by small babies. But that was very helpful to be able to have them come in, and it got easier over time. But I lived on Coumadin for 2 years and then was able to go on Plavix, which was a huge improvement, just not having to go in and be tested, even though it had spread out to, I think, I was every other week or every 3 weeks towards the end there. Mm-hmm. And I got better about managing it myself and learning the things that would impact the thinness of my blood. And I know Melanie and I had a conversation about that last week, about the different things, and she brought up stuff, and I know Patty has too, that I didn't know would, you know, had vitamin K in it and would affect the thinness of your blood. Patty mentioned hummus, which I had no idea.
Yeah, that really surprised me, because, you know, with all of this starting, having gone to blood thinner a while ago, I was going to make the most of maybe a negative situation and try and turn it into a positive one. And soybeans, you know, things that you don't think about that are in the ingredients, but soybeans have 190 milligrams of vitamin K. Broccoli only has 100.
Mm-hmm.
So it's just
and hummus is so good for us. Mm-hmm. We're encouraged to eat it.
You know, truly, and that's a key point that Frater has made with me too, that has really made a difference. I have talked to Coumadin warfarin patients who have said, oh, I can't eat broccoli. That will affect my number. Well, you know, that's not, of course, the point at all. The point is to not stop eating all of these healthy foods. It's to work with your health professional who will help you get the right balance of a healthy diet and then the proper blood thinner amount. And I think that's so important to keep in mind.
Absolutely. Mm-hmm. We need certain amounts of vegetables in order to maintain a healthy heart.
Right.
And without those vegetables, you know, we're really doing ourselves more damage than good. And
right.
So it really is a case of making sure that you're consistent in the amount you're getting from day to day, and then just getting your Coumadin level adjusted so that it, you know, counteracting the amount of.
Mm-hmm.
Right.
It's
really
important that we get those veggies.
Right. Well, and Melanie, you were sharing with me that there are even more sneaky things like olive oil and walnuts.
Oh, yes.
Pretty
Absolutely.
Much anything high in omega-3 fatty acids is going to be high in vitamin K, which was a big surprise to me.
Yeah.
No kidding. That surprises me.
Yeah. Well, typically, you know, we do think of the green things as being the issue for vitamin K. And, you know, the green things are an issue for vitamin K. You know, the broccoli, the spinach, you know, green beans, all of those kinds of things. But there are a lot of things that we don't think of, like, you know, as you just said, Eliz, the olive oil. Well, it stands to reason when it comes out of green olives that it probably does, you know, have a lot of, you know, we probably do have a vitamin K issue there. But there are a lot of things like the walnuts and other nuts that we really don't think about that do have, you know, an impact. They have, you know, very high levels of vitamin K. You know, I think it was Patty, you were just mentioning the hummus. There are things
mm-hmm.
like chickpeas, stuff like that that we just, you know, wouldn't think of because they're not green, but they actually do have a pretty high level.
Right.
So they're one of the things that I think is really important for Coumadin clinics to do is to give us information about what are the foods that do have significant vitamin K levels so that we're aware of it. And I know a lot of people, you know, do receive these booklets that tell about vitamin K, but what they typically say is, oh, okay, this one's low, this food's low, this one's medium, this one's high. Would be really nice if we had, could really sit down and say, okay, well, I've had this much vitamin K from this food and this much from this food, and so this is how much I can have based on my level of medication. But we're not anywhere near that as far as I know.
Sort of
I don't think
if you're diabetic.
Mm-hmm.
You get the, you kind of count up your points and, okay,
right.
I know I can have this much, and you balance it. You're right. That would be a lot easier to say, okay, I have so many vitamin K points I can have today. How am I going to use them?
Right,
mm-hmm.
right. And I used to say if I ever got it all figured out, I'd write a book on it. I never got it all figured out. Oh, and Eliz, you know, you and I were talking last week about this. One of the things that I was surprised to find out about is the impact of alcohol, how alcohol can actually interfere and can cause problems with controlling your INR. So that's something for, you know, folks to be aware of
right.
as well, is to make sure that they're at least keeping a consistent level. My doctor
right.
said, you know, basically told me, I want you to have one glass of wine every day consistently. And, you know, no changing amounts, that sort of thing.
Right.
So keeping it.
Well, I have no problem with that then.
Yeah, yeah.
Give me wine for a minute then. I'm like, what? I can't give up my nightly drink.
Yeah.
If I can have my red wine, I'm happy.
Absolutely. But it is important for us to be aware that if we have fluctuations in the amount of alcohol we have in our body, we're going to
mm-hmm.
have potentially fluctuations in our INR.
Right.
And, you know, another one that I don't think we think about a lot are herbal medications.
Oh,
amen.
Yeah.
They are just being, it's just starting, is going to start reviewing them because there's so much volatility in many areas, but it includes vitamin K, and there's just no evidence as to which ones are higher or lower in between.
Right. Although we do know there are actually certain herbs that we do know interfere with coumadin. Ginseng,
mm-hmm.
Ginkgo biloba, ginger, garlic, and St. John's wort all have been proven to interfere with coumadin.
Hmm.
And in fact,
I'm sorry. Is that why you, if I, you know, when I read a lot, I'll see those particular, I'm drawing a blank. Here's the effect of one of my other medications.
That's right. That's for the beta blocker compensation.
Supplements. Here we go. The supplements. When I'm reading about those various supplements, I do find that often that they say to be careful of those if you are taking any kind of heart medication. So I would assume then that they must be talking about the blood thinners just in general.
Probably so. It may be that those interfere with statins. Because
okay.
I know things like, for example, when I had my stent, at first the doctor said, you know, I want you to take large doses of folic acid. Well, just a few months later, they found that folic acid was causing restenosis, so that stents were closing
mm-hmm.
back up. So he said, nope, no folic acid for you. And then at about the same time, vitamin E also was implicated in problems with stents. So said no folic acid, no, you know, no vitamin E. We've also found that those sometimes interfere with the statin drugs, you know, for heart medication.
No kidding.
So we really, you know, I have written about, you know, vitamins and minerals and those kinds of things as they, I believe, patients were most at risk of, which is pretty swell.
Mm-hmm. See, you know, you have your INR
quite a bit. I was telling you that.
Hold on. Yeah, well, there's a lot to keep track of.
Yeah, there sure is. I almost feel like I want to take my whole list of medications and sit down with somebody and say, analyze this for me. Am I doing any? Is everything okay here? Should I not be doing this? Or should I be taking these? And, of course, I'm not taking anything I'm not told to take. So I don't take anything just kind of on my own. But sometimes I feel like, do they really pay attention to the whole list in front of them? And do they think about, are there any going to be any interactions here that could be potentially causing something else, you know, to not be as effective?
Right. Well, Kay Marie, there are actually some resources you can go to. And I'm actually over on my website right now clicking over to the resources. And I cannot remember if it's Drug Digest or if it's Drug Information Online that gives you, that will actually let you, you know, do interactions. You basically put in one medication, and then you put in a second medication, and it tells you if there are problems with it. And it's going to be one of those, and I cannot recall which one it is. It's either drugdigest.org. Or drugs.com.
And so drugs.com. Okay.
Yeah. So those are some real good resources.
Okay. Because I'm just listening to you, and I'm on a prescription level of folic acid, and I'm on that, and I take that daily, but then I'm also on my blood thinners and everything else. So now I feel like, wait a second, is somebody missing something here?
And, you know, pharmacists try to point those things out, but they may not always catch them. So we have to be proactive about our own health, and so it's great to have some resources. It is over at drugdigest.org. And across the top, there are different, you know, links. One of them is Compare Drugs. And under that link, you can either do drug comparisons or side effect comparisons.
Oh.
Check side effects of common drugs and see how similar drugs compare.
Okay.
So it's a really good resource.
Well, I'm going to definitely put that in my favorites then.
Yep.
Cool. That is a
thank you.
Great resource. Thank you, Melanie.
Sure. I always love to find great resources.
It is fun when you find a good one.
Well, there's so many out there, and you just never know what's giving us the correct situations and correct information. And so,
absolutely. And actually, here's one other resource. Medline Plus has their section on drugs, supplements, and herbal information. And there's herbs and supplements as well. So there's a lot of real good resources, you know, a lot of real good resources out there. That one's a little bit of a harder address. It's www.nlm.nih.gov/MedlinePlus. The easy thing to do is just to go over to my one of my websites, stopafib.org. Up at the top, it says resources. Click on that, and there's a section on drugs.
Okay.
That's an easier way to
find
it.
I'll put a link on the patient's perspective page to Melanie's resource page.
Okay, great. That would be great because there's all kinds of great stuff out there. There's the whole section on medications, and then you know, links to a lot of other good things like the American Heart Association, obviously, American Stroke, some atrial fibrillation resources, then the American College of Cardiology, Heart Rhythm Society, Medline Plus, you know, medicinenet.com. A lot of really good resources here.
Okay. I call her the interpreter for doctors. She can tell all of the medical jargon and the stuff that all of us can understand. So she's a wonderful resource.
Thank you. I've spent much of my life translating technology stuff into English, and so now I have the opportunity to translate medical stuff into plain English so that we can really understand what the impact is and the implications are.
Well, and as you said, we have to be proactive.
Absolutely.
And the best way of being proactive is to be well-informed.
Yeah.
Melanie, you had mentioned that you had trouble being regulated on the warfarin or Coumadin and found that it was something that's not all that common, but also not very all that rare problem for people.
Right. What happened with me is I actually, the reason I was on Coumadin was because of a condition that I had called atrial fibrillation, which is the most common irregular heartbeat, and it's the quivering of the upper chambers of the heart, and as a result, blood clots will form in the upper chambers of the heart and then get shot out to the rest of the body and potentially can cause a stroke. So they give you Coumadin to keep from having those blood clots build up and cause a stroke. Well, I had been on the medication for the atrial fibrillation and on the Coumadin for a little over, about 2 years, and as I said, never was able to really be stable on the Coumadin. And you know, I kept trying and trying and trying and thinking, what is wrong with me? Everybody else is stable on it. Why can't I be stable on it? And then some research came out about that time that indicated that about a fourth of Coumadin patients are never able to be stable on it, and it's because of genetic reasons. There are certain genes that really keep you from being stable. And so those of us that are having a hard time being stable on Coumadin, it may not be our fault. It may not be that we're not doing the right things. It may be something about our body that's keeping us from ever being stable. And that's going on with me. And so that's when I started looking for a solution that would allow me to get off the Coumadin, and I found a solution, had a surgery that allowed me to get off the Coumadin about 3 months after that three. But, you know, when we hear women and men talk about, you know, difficulty stabilizing, and they're doing the right things with their diet, you know, keeping consistent amounts of, you know, of greens and vitamin K in their diet, and they're still having problems, then there may be stuff that's really just beyond their control. And, you know, when that's the case, then it's appropriate to look for a more permanent solution. And that's what I found myself doing.
And we can hear more
about
that
next month. And I feel lucky that
month.
I found one. What was that, Elise?
And we can hear more about that next month.
Absolutely. When we talk about atrial fibrillation.
Absolutely. I'm excited about that conversation as well. One of the things that we're getting short on time, but I didn't want to miss out because I think it's very important to talk a little bit about that stroke issue, because all of us on blood thinners need to be aware that there's a risk of stroke out there.
Mm-hmm.
And Patty has a long running history of educating people about stroke, and I thought I'd toss this over to her and talk about her daily stroke assessment.
When you the were mini
the
one?
Heart, no, when you were working at the Heart Association.
Oh, yes. You know how you become hypochondriac with whatever you are working with? At approximately 3 to 3:15 every day, I thought I was suffering a stroke. Not really. And yet, I'd be at the computer, I'd be pounding away, and my eyes would just get so sore. And then that was when my imagination started taking over. So I would pull away from the computer, just put my head onto my hand and think, oh, it's 3:12. It's almost time for my stroke. and then perspective would come back, and I would force myself to do that little mini type of thing where you smile, you say your name, and you put your hands over your head. But it was amazing how this daily stroke became routine, to the point where my assistant would walk by, look at me as my head was on my hand, and say, oh gosh, is it stroke time already? Yes, I am now happy to report that I have not worked for the Heart Association after many, many, many happy years. And I have now been stroke-free for a few months now.
How do you never cease to amaze me?
quite a success story in itself in its own kind of way.
But let's go back and review those three little things, because I think it's a really good tool for people to have.
Well, the first one is smiling to see, you know, if you have a side of your face that is drooping. These are things that are so easy for a medical expert to see, and they are now becoming rather commonplace when EMS is being called in an emergency to very quickly assess for stroke. So the first one is smiling. The second one is to say your name to make sure that, you know, you can speak clearly. And then the third one is to put your hands above your head to make sure that you do not have a side that is numb and not working. And again, that's a mini assessment, but it's one that really gives a very quick handle on whether there is an emergency taking place or not that would be stroke related.
How easy for people to remember, too.
Yeah, well, exactly. Exactly.
Mm-hmm. I mean, the common layperson could be like, okay, you know, something doesn't look right with this person. Do this, and this. I mean, how easy.
Mm-hmm. Exactly. Right. Very, very much so.
Mm-hmm. It's a good tool.
Great. great.
So, well, we are getting close to the end of our time. Does anybody have any questions or comments or things that they'd like to share?
You know,
I just have one tiny thing
that at first made me feel old, but I figured out how to fix that. There would be times when I would go in to the anticoagulation clinic, and I really couldn't remember if I had missed a dose or not. And the pharmacist looked at me with eyes of, okay, lady, and said, use a pill case.
Oh, yeah.
I didn't want to use a pill case. My mother uses a pill case. But I started using a pill case. My pill case, however, has beautiful rhinestones all around it. And it's a delight to look at every day. So that's just been my saving grace of having to buckle down and admit the memory just isn't what it used to be.
Well, I tell you, you're on a beta blocker, aren't you, Patty?
Yes.
Yeah, that's not age.
That's not age.
That's the beta blocker stupid.
Yeah.
So I think in November. No, let's schedule it in October. We'll do women living on beta blockers because we can do a whole thing on the beta blocker stupid.
I'm in on that.
We may want to make sure that's a 1-800 call. Because we're going to be on for a long time. For those of us who can remember, I call in.
Love it. Love it.
Oh, my goodness.
Thank you for joining The Patient's Perspective. Please visit the Embrace Your Heart Wellness Initiative website at www.embraceyourheart.com. Click on the Patient's Perspective link to find archived recordings, downloadable special reports, a link to Melanie's resources, and an opportunity to share your thoughts about women living on blood thinners and other topics. I'd like to thank my guests, Melanie True Hills, Kay Marie Cordes, and Patty Borkowski. Until we meet again, this is Eliz Green wishing you good health and a positive perspective.